Hi there and welcome to Happy Thistle with me, Woody Morris. Happiness is all around us, but sometimes it can be hard to find. I'm here to remind you of your happy, sharing top tips along the way and helping you remember when you smile, the world smiles back. Let's go. Here's the show. Fantastic. So yeah, so I'm so excited to be chatting to a buddy of mine that, and we've not seen each other for a long time, but I've been following your incredible journey. Well, first of all, I'll introduce you as the gorgeous Jeannie Cronk, who is a co-founder with your lovely husband, Stephen, of Maison Mirabeau. And if any French or any rosy wine drinkers out there, who are lovers of rosy wine, you will know this brand. So I just thought about you because you are the epitome of following your dream, just doing it. So should we start from the beginning? So obviously we first met when we were both living in Twickenham, and well, you were in Strawberry. Where were you? Yeah, you were Twickenham, weren't you? You were just around the corner.
Yeah, and I was Twickenham then there.
Yeah. Yeah, and we had, both of us have got three children, and we kind of, had mutual friends, and, you know, so we were doing the London thing, and you guys were talking about moving to France, and, you know, going to do the, you know, it's life in Provence, that whole thing, following your dream. So let's start there, let's start from the beginning. So how did that come about, and where did the idea come from?
Well, for starters, there was a lot of talking, so, and sorry, back to, thank you for having me. It's so nice to catch up. Such a great and reason to catch up again, because it really has been a long time. But yeah, so Stephen and I, I think we started talking even before we got married about this dream that we both had about living in the south of France. We both had sort of, you know, links to here from the past. And Stephen came from a wine background, and he wanted to get back into the wine industry. So we spent a lot of time debating it and not really doing anything about it. And I think a lot of people will feel that is a situation they know, because, you know, we all have these dreams, and then, you know, kids' schooling gets in the way, mortgages get in the way, you know, there's always, a good reason not to do it. And I think that's one of the things we came to eventually to a conclusion, roughly at the same time, that, you know, actually the timing is never going to be great, or it's never going to be perfect. And that if we are going to do it before we lie in a coffin, then, you know, we better sort of get on with it. So in the end, we just thought, okay, let's just have a try, you know, and worst case, you know, what's the worst that can happen? We come back with tail between our legs, and our friends will tell us that they told us so. And, we won't be able to get back into the housing ladder. But we just thought, okay, sod it. You know, you only live once. And so we just did it.
I love that. And I think as well, which was, we were looking at what you were doing. I think a lot of us, kind of envious. I mean, I moved away from London around about the same time, but you'd just done up your house. It was just gorgeous. And I suppose anybody looking in, either, well, I guess there's two trains of thoughts. You're absolutely mad, or good on them. They're following their dream, because so many people don't. And that's why I wanted to get you on here today, because we have one life. You've got to follow that instinct, that gut feeling, whatever it is. Because if you don't, I think you just leave. You end up, you know, so with so much potential inside you that you've never fulfilled. So good on you. And look what you've created, because it's not been, you know, a plain sailing, has it? You've had your ups and your downs, and it's not been an easy ride. For one, when you first went, that was the first, it was 2008, so we all know what happened then. So, you know, that was your first kind of challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah, so we ended up leaving in 2009, because actually it was, as you know, the financial crisis made it quite difficult for us to leave, because we needed to sell our house, and our house was kind of our seed money. So that house that I had, you know, loved so much and done up with so much passion, was actually the, you know, the little seed that allowed our business to grow. So, but you know, we couldn't have, certainly couldn't afford to sell it, you know, for less.
For people listening, Jeannie has impeccable taste, by the way. I mean, it was like the show home. You know, all our houses were trashed with children and stuff everywhere. And your house was just like so just, oh, pristine. It was stunning, absolutely stunning.
It was a lovely place. And I do always remember that, you know, when we left, the day we basically Stephen hit reverse on the car, I actually had my head on my lap and I was wailing like a sort of wounded animal, and my children were sitting in the back going, oh my God, Mom, what's going on? Dad, what have you done? So yeah,
because it was really... Stephen, I guess, because it was Stephen's idea. I mean, you went with it as a very gorgeous, supportive wife, but you know, it wasn't like it was your idea. So maybe that's, you're putting all your hope and faith into your husband, which sometimes it's a, you know, it can be hard, can't it? Because you'd created a home and a life for yourselves in London, and then this was it, you were going. So that was the first. So
these lovely, like we said earlier, you know, we had those lovely friendships, you know, us at a sort of mum level, and then the kids, you know, and there were a lot of, you know, a lot of lovely links on a personal level. I mean, other things, to be honest, you know, you probably come to it, but it's an interesting one because, you know, I did also feel a lot of stress living in London, because there was the constant stress of, you know, which school would you put your kid at, and you know, which what career move was your husband planning, and you know, why weren't you back at work? You know, I didn't go back to work for a long time, actually, because, you know, I did actually quite enjoy being with my kids, and I sort of retrained a bit on the side in interior design, which, you know, my house was my kind of trial universe. But so it was an interesting time, because you're really torn as a woman, on the one hand saying, okay, you must, you know, you must kind of keep up with everyone. And on the other hand, obviously, we had some really, really nice moments and lovely friendships that we were leaving behind for a completely uncertain future. So it was a really tough time, definitely.
And then when you, and I remember that time, it was, you know, we lived near Marble Hill Park, for anybody living in that area. It was a beautiful place, like you know, lovely friendships with children, you know, so you're going through navigating that crazy time of having babies and, you know, like you know, the same, you know, I was the same with my TV career. You know, I didn't really want to go back and give my children over to a nanny. Well, I didn't in the end, but it is a very difficult time, I think, for women who've had a career, and you know, it's that choice, isn't it? And it is, anyway, that's a whole different story, so let's stick with your journey. So you headed out to France a wee bit later than you'd originally planned, and then just, you know, talk us through how you found the house, how you, you know, found the area where you wanted to make the wine. You know, how did you make these decisions?
Yeah, so it was a typical last minute dot cronk kind of, you know, affair, basically, because we, unlike most people, we sort of quite often do first and plan later. So we actually had a sort of a plan to move to Aix-en-Provence, which is, you know, a biggish city with an international school. And we thought, okay, we can have a sort of semi-soft landing here. And the kids can go into an English speaking environment first before we kind of, you know, become more and more French. But that somehow really didn't work out because we couldn't find anywhere to live, which was really quite a joke, because we thought that would be super easy. You know, France having, you know, just, we just thought there was more space and we'd easily find a nice family home not far from school. And what we realized was that, you know, around X is a super busy area. It's really quite mental in the morning to get from A to B, actually worse than what I had in London, perversely. So in the end, we really, as a complete, you know, in a complete moment of madness, we actually decided to move to this little village where I now live, called Cotignac, where a friend of ours was living and who had basically said, come and have a look. You know, we've got quite a good school here. There's a few expats, so you're not going to be completely on your own. But, you know, why don't you consider actually living in the countryside? So we changed our mind like literally at the last second. And Stephen rocked up here one day dressed in a suit at the local school, where he was just laughed at by the headmaster, who was in flip-flops. And he was like, "How can I get my kids into the school?" And the guy just said, "Just come on the 1st of September." And we were like, "What? What do
That's
you mean?"
so refreshing, isn't
down
it?
at birth, and you know, and so it was just this sort of moment where we just realized this our life here is not going to be the same as the one we had back home.
Wow. And then they started school. And how did the children adjust? Because I know, again, it's not been all plain sailing for the children, because you guys didn't even speak French. I mean, that's nuts.
Yeah, I've spoke sort of passable French, but Stephen didn't really much, and the kids really didn't at all. I mean, other than sort of, you know, ordering a sandwich or something. And so, I mean, quite frankly, it was really rough, and there were lots of tears and lots of, why did you do this to us? And I don't want to go to school, you know, and they've got a long school day. With, I have to say, one of the big attractions, amazing, awesome food at the canteen in the middle. I was very jealous of that, because they eat, you know, veal schnitzel and moule frites and, you know, kind of things that you wouldn't normally expect to
yeah,
be
school, yeah, school dinners,
followed by a cheese course. And then so they got quite quickly hooked on the great menu. But it was a really long time, and it took much, much longer than people kind of led us to believe. You know, people were always like, "Oh, in half a year, you know, they'll be speaking perfect French and they won't even remember England." And it's really not true. You know, my daughter took a really big knock, actually, in terms academically, because she basically moved a year up, you know, just through the difference in the school years. So she found it really hard, eventually caught up. But I mean, it took a few years, basically. And my middle one, you know, Molly Felix was super unhappy, you know, psychologically, just unhappy, wanting to go back to England. So yeah, basically it's not something to be taken quite as lightly as people make it out to be, but you know, perseverance in the end
absolutely
made it happen. And they got happy.
So how did you navigate that? Was there times when you thought, do you know what, screw this, we're going back, we just can't do this anymore?
There were definitely times where we thought, God, we've made a terrible mistake. You know what? One of the things that you'll understand really, really well is we did buy a dog, and that made just the most incredible difference. because that dog, well, especially my middle one, you know, just gave him that companionship and that, you know, anchored him and made him so much, a much, much happier human. So my dog is like our little holy cow at home, because that dog really, I mean, took care of all of us, you know, in a strange way. And then gradually, you know, just, you know, those things that you would normally do, just trying to really hard to build your kids' friendships, you know, that's, and in an environment where the kind of things that you and I were used to, from sort of Teddington days, didn't really happen. So people don't really do play dates. You know, it's kind of, you know, after school, you kind of go home, do your homework, go back to school the next day. So you have to work quite hard at saying, oh, should we meet up after school? Should I come to the playground? And then I actually joined almost immediately the parents committee, because that's something I'd done in the UK as well. I'd always raised money for the school. And that was my sort of my entry door into, you know, into being a proper person in that community. And that really, really helped. So I became president really shortly after, because nobody wanted to lead the organization anymore. And that sort of, it's really great. It shows people that you want to get involved. It gives you lots of opportunity to speak French, you know, meet people. And that really, really helped.
Were the French welcoming to you, you know, or was it that sort of stereotypical thing that sometimes we think that the French maybe aren't as welcoming to English people? Did you, I mean, and you're not English, I mean, you're obviously South African, but as
I'm
an
German.
English, German,
oh
rather, sorry, German, oh my goodness, of course. I remember I always thought that, I used to always think that you were South African.
I sound a bit South African.
Yeah, because you've always, yeah, that's so funny. Oh, apologies, of course. I remember having this conversation with you years ago, because I always thought you were South African. But that's the point. So, you know, did you find that the French, did they welcome you in initially, or was it quite a hard, was it kind of a hard kind of deal to kind of break in?
You know what? It was, it, it no, they've always been really good to us. quite honestly, you know, here, you know, it is all about the language at the end of the day, that in that, you know, it's just not a place where English is naturally spoken. Therefore, if you don't make your effort on speaking French, you're going to find it much, much harder, and you're going to kind of be much more excluded. Whereas as soon as I spoke passable French, you know, it was fine. And they were, I mean, you know, also professionally speaking, I want to say, you know, for somebody who really was a complete sideways, you know, person coming especially for me, into the wine business, you know, people sort of thought, I mean, what are these two people doing here? You know, they're sort of from the UK trying to make wine. And it was but actually people were really, really helpful. I mean, we got people who gave us, you know, gave us the time of day, gave us credit, gave us, you know, helped us financially. But you just think, oh my gosh, you know, when I now look back at how we arrived, I just think that took an extraordinary amount of actually just good naturedness and faith and being kind that they didn't need to, right? So yeah, no, really awesome.
Because amongst all of this, you guys were trying to make wine. I mean, you'd not even started that yet. So, you know, that's a, you know, huge undertaking as it is. You know, you're there trying to sort the family, get yourself a home, you know, create, you know, friendships and all this kind of stuff. But it wasn't like, you know, Stephen was going into slotting into a job. You know, that you guys had to come together and create the wine, you know, from scratch. I mean, that's, you know, where do you start with that?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, we basically started working with some of the best local growers. So that was, you know, that was the way for us to start, because you couldn't, well, I mean, you know, we just didn't have, you know, the funds to start off with our own vineyard. So we just worked with people here who had an amazing reputation for you know, growing great fruit. And then we always had a bit of help on the, you know, on the sort of oenology side as well. But yeah, so that's how we got started. And then we sort of, you know, we basically made our first wine, and we managed to convince Waitrose to take it on a basis of, okay, there it is on the bottom shelf.
I remember when that happened, because we were obviously following your journey. And we were like, I was taking pictures, sending it, going, I've seen your wine. And it's delicious, by the way, guys. If you've never tried any of Mirabeau, it's gorgeous. Obviously, I'm a fizz drinker, so I kept saying to you guys, when are you going to do the fizz? And actually, it came out, was it 2018? La Folie came out. 2017.
Actually, one of our fastest growing product. So
it's probably me buying it. It's so delicious. But that's just I mean, that's just amazing. I remember being so proud because we'd seen you guys, caught up with you a few years before that in I think we were in Nice.
Yeah.
And it is just before you did your sparkling wine. And that's the thing now, because you're now listed as one of the world's best specialist winemakers. I mean, that is some achievement, from chucking all your kids in the car and driving your way over to France when you don't even know where you're going. That's incredible. That must have been quite an amazing, amazing moment for you.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it is amazing. And it's just, as you, you know, I think you will understand really well, it's really hard always to sort of see the, you know, you see all the peaks in front of you, and you rarely stop to kind of think, you know, what you've actually done. And, you know, and I also am not a great believer in sort of, you know, blowing too much smoke up one's own backside. I think you always should come back down to earth really quickly. So I don't, you know, I personally don't make a big deal of it, and don't want to, and think it's really important to stay humble and to stay in the local network, and to not, you know, to not lose your grounding. And in wine, you know what? Wine is also a great product to make you feel humble, because you have to, you know, you have to make it again every year. So every year, you know, you've got a vintage to go over. Every year, you've got a new blend to make that people need to love. And you're only ever as good as your last vintage, almost. So it's not something that you can ever kind of go, oh, well, you know, now I know what I'm doing. I've made a product that works. You know, all I have to make is more of it. It's always a challenge again, year on year. And it is, and it's what makes it super exciting and super beautiful, but also quite tough. And you will never feel really, or I don't think I will anyway. I'll never feel like I've arrived, because there's always something else to do. And it's, you know, that's what makes it such an interesting business, as well as such a scary business.
Yeah. And an exciting lifestyle, because you don't know it. I mean, if you can handle that, you know, some people like the comfort, like that kind of stuff. But everybody always says magic happens outside your comfort zone. And you probably every year you're outside your comfort zone because of what's going on. And also weather, you know, Mother Nature plays a massive part in it as well. I mean, I know you guys get a lot more sunshine down there than we do in the UK, but you know, it's not a done deal, is it?
Yeah, no, it isn't. And you know, I'm not sure that whether you saw it, but you know, a couple of years ago, in the meantime, we do have a vineyard that actually got caught up in a huge wildfire. So we had we lost some buildings. We lost the whole harvest. I mean, luckily, it's not the only place where we make wine from. So as a business, we could basically carry on. But it was a really, really, I mean, I feel like after that, we had a sort of post-traumatic stress moment, because when you actually just see, you know, the forest on fire and afterwards my vines looking, you know, like they'd had a blowtorch kind of run over them, you know, and you just know that, my gosh, you know, life on this planet isn't going to get any easier. And that's why also actually we'd already started before the fire and out of conviction, but we've started on a new system of wine growing, which is called regenerative viticulture. I mean, you've probably come across it because it's a lot of farmers, you know, practice it more for food farming than for viticulture. But it's a really interesting way to look at the world and look at the soil and try and basically do less damage to the planet while you're still growing your crop, while you're still hopefully making good wine. And we've started that three and a half years ago. And it's really, inverted commas, bearing fruit. I mean, we obviously had the big sort of, you know, the moment of the fire, which kind of took us backwards. But now we've actually had a really good harvest, and we don't have to irrigate our crop. And we barely plow anymore. We use animals in the vineyard, and it's all slightly sort of looking back to, you know, how people before mm-hmm. used to grow things, not forgetting that we've advanced clearly technologically. I mean, you don't want to sort of completely go back in time, but taking the best of what they did right, combined with our sort of technology, you know, knowledge, and without all the bits in between, without throwing all this stuff onto your vineyard, you know, basically having dead soil and having to fertilize and in order to have a crop, you know, so there's a lot going on there, and we really want to be at the forefront of it.
Well, that's so refreshing to hear, because we, you know, I talk a lot about food and what we eat and the goodness in food, and because of the way that the world's farmed our soil, you know, the goodness in the soil is kind of nil. And you know there's a quote about to get the same amount of vitamin C or goodness from an orange that your granny ate, you'd have to eat 8 oranges, because of the way the soil has been just completely pillaged. And it's so lovely to hear that you guys are doing that. But I think it has to be the way forward, because we cannot continue what we're doing to the earth. And you know what, I'm so, you know, for you guys, and I'm so glad it's working, and it's, you know, like you say, inverted commas, bearing fruit, because I think it is really, people are now looking towards brands that are about sustainability, about giving back, you know, Corp Bees, stuff like that, who, it's not just about making money, it's about, you know, having a purpose, you know, being good to the people and the planet. And, you know, you've tied all this in, and still, you know, you're winning awards for your wine, which is incredible. Do you ever just pinch yourself, or are you just too busy?
It's not my personality, I think, and I am usually too busy. But it is, you know, what's so important, you know, I guess coming back to what your, you know, really what the subject of your series of talks here is that, you know, you just need to eke out that time to actually, you know, forget about all that and just be happy in yourself and with your family. And that's really, you know, that's the bit that, you know, that we're always at most danger to lose, because we get so wrapped up in work. We get so wrapped up in all the things we haven't done. I mean, you know, we all know what it's like to also be online all the time. You know, I'm really, really involved in that world, because a lot of our sort of, you know, communication outwards is via social media. So I can't not be on it. But it is very easy to get caught up and going, oh my God, they're doing that, and I haven't done that, and I haven't thought about that, and you know, oh my God, am I going to be left behind? And you know, all of these, which I totally sympathize as well with my kids, you know, who just have grown up with that and constantly feel they're not fashionable, beautiful, or clever, or whatever enough. And so it's just so nice if you're able to kind of just put all this to one side, even if it's for half a day, you know. And I get these moments, obviously, you know, when my kids are. That come home, but also I get them quite
your kids have all left now. Your kids are all away.
Yeah, sorry, my kids have actually grown up and left her. Well, I've still got a 14-year-old who's at boarding school, but everybody else has left and making their own life.
You're like me, it's just heartbreaking.
Oh yeah. How dare they? I work, you know, still a lot with farmers here. So what I find really nice is actually, you know, quite often I get the chance, because it is very important that I have a really close relationship with them and that I understand what they're doing. But they, you know, we sit outside on the side of a vineyard, you know, probably sharing a baguette with a, you know, in a sort of really corny, you know, way that you would expect in a magazine, but you know, just really simple life, you know. And these moments are just so nice, you know. They are about smelling whatever the wildflowers is. There are no roses, you know. And those are the moments where you just come home and you feel great, and you feel like you've just had a human to human kind of contact. And that, you know, and those moments bring you back to, you know, that. The simplest moments, not the big award ceremonies, you know, which stress the shit out of me anyway. But you know,
but it comes back.
Like that are the best.
Yes, simple. There's, you know, it's the simple things in life, you know. And I was chatting away to Mark Beaumont last week, who's cycled around the world. He's got all these incredible accolades, and he came back to his happiest time is playing catch with his daughter in the back garden. And you know, the more people I speak to, and this is why I find this just such a fascinating subject, happiness, is when you ask anybody or the majority of people, it's back to spending time with my dog, going for a walk. There you are, just sitting in a field eating a baguette with a French farmer. I mean, it's just, you know, it's just gorgeous. And I think that's the thing, people have to really get present and remember, it's the wee moments in our lives that make the big moments. And, you know, yeah, going to an awards ceremony and getting awards is incredible. And it's great for us to watch you and share in your success. But like you say, it comes back to the simple things. Do you have a favorite of your wines? Or is there one that you would always go to? Do you sit and drink lots of wine with Stephen?
Of course, we can never quite bear to tip them down the drain. So after a tasting or something, so there usually are a few bottles in our fridge, you know, with a cork in them. So I change favorites over also in the course of the year, but I guess the one that, you know, I really absolutely love to make and I love to show off is Pure. I don't know if you, and I've redone the bottle this year. So that's been a huge sort of project, because having a sort of, I guess, a unique bottle is something that's become really interesting and important in our industry. So I've sort of, you know, I've thrown myself at this also from a sort of design point of view. It's been a really, really great challenge, because we hit the middle of, you know, a complete supply shortage in terms of glass, and of course costs going through the roof. And you know, it's been a really tough few years, actually, those last three. But the result's been really awesome, and people just can't stop holding it and touching it. So that's exactly what I wanted. I wanted it to be really tactile and people being really intrigued by it. So, and I basically reproduced the ripples of the sea in the bottle. So,
amazing.
I must send you some.
Yes.
About
to come out. Oh, it sounds
that's
amazing.
That's exciting. And
that
then
is
there's
very exciting.
Trial, which I also love, which is our sort of slightly more, you know, complex wine, but it's a really nice slow sipping wine, so it's lovely.
And do you ever have times, you know, because obviously we're all into health and wellness and all the rest of it, do you have times when you don't drink? Do you say, right, we're not drinking for a month, or do you go, right, we're going to be good?
So we never really do a whole long dry period, because it's also quite difficult, because we always have to have people coming. But you know, we're not you know, I've always been a relatively careful drinker. And I always advise people to be careful, you know, with alcohol, because it's so easy to kind of just become, well, it becoming such a habit. So, you know, and appreciating what you drink, you know, so you buy yourself a nice bottle, and then, you know, if you just have a glass, you know, wine keeps well in the fridge. Do you know what I mean? People always feel like, oh my gosh, you know, we can't put half a bottle back in the fridge. And yes, you can. And then, and a good wine, you know, I'm quite happy getting it back out of the fridge 2 days later. So just to have, you know, I personally like the ritual, just, you know, having a meal, having a glass of wine, talking. But after, I don't, you know, I'll have a cup of tea afterwards, you know, because I just, you know, I just think it's important to look after yourself. And the way actually the French do it is quite nice. They just, you know, it is a much more considered approach anyway. It's usually with a meal, you know, they don't get so carried away. And it's something that, you know, I guess I always did more or less, but I've seen here, you know, resonating here. So yeah. So, but we've always got days where we don't drink at all. Definitely days in the week, 2 or 3 days in the week, we don't.
Yeah. That's, well, could you imagine you'd just be looking in at you just guzzling rosé all the time, but of course
yeah,
you don't.
Yeah, no, that doesn't become you.
I'm sure it would for some people though. I'm sure it would. So what does the future hold for Maison Mirabeau and Jeannie and Stephen?
Well, listen, quite difficult question actually, because we're always so in the now, just kind of you know, doing what we're doing. So I think definitely, I mean, you mentioned B Corp earlier, so we're certifying also as B Corp. So in a couple of months,
wow,
through, which was a really big job for us, because we have a pretty big supply chain in our business, so we have to look at all our partners, and so I think that plus Stephen's founded a foundation for this regenerative viticulture, so we're going to try and work a lot more on the sustainability aspect, and actually, you know, becoming a voice in viticulture for that. That's not to say we do everything perfectly, because some of these changes do take quite a bit of time. So, but it's something that we wanna do more of. And personally, I'd really love to do more. You know, I'm working a lot on sort of on the design front, and that makes me super happy. And, you know, I just want to do lots more of that. And having also sort of more lifestyle-y products, I guess, that you would have around the home, and having more of that south of France, you know, lifestyle, what you put on the table, not just rosé. So that's really my sort of passion, that rosé is part of a bigger thing, of a lifestyle, of a kind of happy moment, you know, those kind of radiant happy moments, and I want to help create more of these for everyone. So
I love that. I would just to say to listeners, they must check your Instagram out, and it is always so beautiful, everything, the way you do it, and you always look so perfect. And I know it's not like that, but the point is that you know it's always so pretty with the pink, and you know, you've got such a great eye for just making look, you know, things that are very, very simple, but just look incredibly classy and gorgeous. So I'm just so proud of both of you. I remember the journey so well at the beginning, when you guys left London, we left not long after you, and watching you guys and just go from success to success. And it's just been so rewarding as your friend to watch. And I know we're all just super, super proud of both of you, and all your family, on, you know, your children too, because of everything that you guys have done and achieved. And what an inspiration for people looking in. You know, it is that thing, follow your dream, follow your heart, because the magic does happen outside your comfort zone. So before you go, Jeannie, obviously, this is this podcast is all about happiness and just helping people find their happy. Where are you at your happiest, or what advice would you give to somebody?
Oh gosh, I'm usually happiest. I think, like I said earlier, in the most simple of situation. I mean, personally, and I know that obviously sitting by the sea is not something that, you know, everyone can do. But those are the sort of, you know, and I guess it's just a metaphor for, you know, sort of sitting there and you kind of, you know, you feel the sand, you've got the air. You know, there's just these moments. I guess it is always going to be around nature. You know, I'm never happiest sitting in a Michelin star restaurant. You know, that just doesn't. So I think that's at the end of the day what people need to come back to, having these moments again where they go and say, actually, you know, we're on this world. It's a chance. You know, we've got just this crazy luck to be here and to be able to appreciate it. And that's what I would always. You know, for me, those are the best moments. Just, you know, just calm, looking out onto the sea and thinking nothing in particular usually is the best thing.
Just looking at the sea, thinking nothing. It sounds perfect. Jeannie, thank you so much for your time. You're amazing. Oh, carry on being amazingly inspirational. We will, I'm sure lots of people will be sampling your Miribo wine and your rosé after this. And La Folie is my favorite, but thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you soon. I need to get to Provence. I need to come and see you.
Yeah, you do. We should do a podcast from here.
See? Yeah. Oh my God, that sounds amazing. By the sea.
Listen, thank you so much. It was so, so good to catch up, and sending you lots of bisous from Provence, and à bientôt.
Oh, thank you,
my
darling.
And a big hello to all your lovely listeners. I'm so happy you're doing this. It's fabulous, brilliant. And I'm sure helps lots of people often, you know, I know what it's like to be in tricky circumstances. So, and it's really nice to have a sort of upbeat voice like yours coming into your space and making you feel better.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, darling. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks so much for joining me. If you loved what you heard and think it could help someone else, then please do share on social media. You can find me on Instagram at Woody Morris with two Y's. And if you feel inclined, please jump onto Apple Podcasts and leave a wee review. Thank you so much for listening. It means the world. And always remember, when you smile, the world smiles back. See you next time.